Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is David Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. We've got Nick Aubrey on the show this week to talk about form, staking, and how he goes about it as we continue the For and Against series. So let's have a chat with Nick. G'day, Nick. Thanks for joining us again.
Yes, g'day, David. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you on. We're trying to get a cross-section of people for this series, mm-hmm. and you said fit the bill as someone that doesn't do things the same way as a lot of other people.
Yep. Oh, everybody's different, I guess.
Of course. So we'll get stuck into it, and you can explain those differences. So, in terms of form, are you someone that likes to sit down and do the form per se, or is it more about data?
Well, I must admit, data tends to solidify. I mean, and I guess I got into racing because of my gut feel aspects. I thought, oh, this is easy. I can work out what the odds and form should be. But data is a very clinical way of representing horses' performance. I mean, it's a bit less biased than perhaps the gut feel. For instance, on Saturday, that freak run, maybe it is a freak, maybe it's not, of Winx to win the Cox Plate. That was fantastic, and that'll never leave my mind. But what is probably not considered when you think of that is, was there track bias on the day? What a freak run that Huey Bowman got to go up in the inside, because, what chance, was that a high-risk ride or low-risk? I mean, there's a lot of factors that only the facts and figures later on will tell.
Specialise in certain races, or do you cover many?
As many, because I see, because of, I get a data feed, so therefore I can do as many as I like, but the idea is to have as many to bet on as many races as possible to try to spread the risk. And really, betting is more, it's not so much about backing winners, but getting the right price about them. The winners will come when they're good and ready. So I try to do as many races and bet into as many races as possible.
I've heard you say that a few times. You might just want to touch on that briefly. Yeah, the winners will come along when they're good and ready. That's always been your approach.
Yes, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, depending upon your circumstances, if you're a punter or a bookmaker, but it's a zero-sum game. So, and bookmakers tend to charge a margin, and to win on the punt, you've got to overcome that margin. And because there's so many people looking at so many, like, for instance, the Cox Plate, the margins there, you're not going to get 20-1 about Winx, because the market's got it pretty right. And so, therefore, you've got to get the best price about Winx. So people who took 6-1 about Winx the day before or whatever, they were laughing. But people who just put it on the tab and took the 420, well, okay, they got the winner, but would that price, if they got it all the time, be sufficient to make a profit in the long term? So it's all about the price you get. But right. Of course, you need the winners as well, but the winners will come when they're good and ready, and not because nobody can predict what the next one is around the bend.
Yep. What about speed maps? How do they form the way you price a race or the way you want to bet?
Yes, well, that is something that I've always been interested in it, but I've been just circumstances. I've been looking at that in a lot more detail of late. It's amazing that even in races where you don't think speed is that important, like more of the staying races, backing an on-pace runner in terms of typically their value and their ability to win, it's amazing that on-pace runners, all things being equal, have a better chance than backmarkers. I guess because they miss interference. And also, if it's a good jockey on board and he can pace the race well, then sometimes he can pinch it, when in fact maybe it's not the best horse on the day.
How do you rate jockeys? Do you place a critical importance there for jockeys and also trainers?
Trainers, not so much, because they tend to rise quickly, rise slowly. I mean, the Chris Wallers, he's obviously a very good trainer, and he's been training for many years, but his stock seemed to get improvement as he wins. He gets the better horses, and so obviously, I think there was a race a few weeks ago, I think he might have had 90% of the field, but that's because he's such a good trainer, owners want to put their charges in his control. So to actually get an edge, because remember, it's all about the price, I tend to discount trainers. Although maybe a trainer on a home track could be something that gives you a bit better price than normal. Jockeys in form, however, do, for some reason, because they're on the horse. I mean, system that one of my mates uses, he says, I always back the jockey that's won the first race of the day, through the day. And the other interesting thing I've noticed that, especially if you're with the jockey challenge, you'll find that a jockey that's in contention in the last race for the jockey challenge, it's amazing how well they ride on that last race. I don't know what it is. They just have their tails up and they just go for broke. So a jockey in form is a good jockey to follow.
Barriers, do you place much importance there?
Well, it's more to do with, it's a combination of barriers and runners, as I mentioned earlier. Winks, inside barrier, and that across that distance. I remember, years ago, there was a horse, was the favourite, but it was inside barrier, but it's a leader in the race, and it was still favourite, 6-4, and it had to be used up early, it had to pull right across, get to the front, which it did, but then dropped out in the straight. So it very much depends upon what barriers drawn for this type of running style and the distance of the race, and whether the start of the race is on the bend of a like on the turn, because some of the races, especially in the provincials, they can be starting right at the turn. So you've got to probably back horses that are going to be jumping from jumping fast from the inner boxes. But for other races, probably not important at all. So again, horses for barriers rather than horses for courses.
Are you much of a believer in weights?
Weights, well, they say the old adage, weight can stop a train. There's no doubt that it's certainly important, but one angle I do look at is not so much the weight above the limit, but has this horse carried this weight previously before and won a race? So maybe horses can carry a certain weight easily. It doesn't matter if they're on 54 or 58, they'll be able to carry that. But you put them up to 60 and they'll struggle. So it's a bit like the last straw that breaks a camel's back. So, yeah, it's a bit of an unknown area. There's no doubt that that's the whole basis of handicapping horses. It's based on weights. And you can also see when a horse throws his jockey, as it did a couple of weeks ago. I told my partner, I said, watch this one rush around the outside. It threw its jockey in the barrier, right? So it was about 10, 20 lengths behind the last horse at the start, and it circled the field, went right around the outside of the field and went away and won by about 4 or 5 lengths, because, I mean, that's the natural instinct of a horse to run. It's a pack animal. But the fact it was unweighted meant it had a huge advantage, so obviously it does, but it's a matter of what the marginal difference is. So, yes, I do, but I'm still struggling. The jury's still out about how big an effect weight has from week to week.
Trials, they've become more and more exposed over the last few years. How do you assess them when you're doing the form?
I think trials are a good indication if the trainer thinks that this horse, if he wants to win first up, because let's face it, even though there's a lot of stewards and what have you looking at the performance of horses, I've often heard a trainer say, and in fact, the horses I have owned, although be it too few, they've said, oh, yeah, look, Nick, don't waste your hard earned on this one. I'm just really sending it around as a bit more than a track gallop. But if that same horse had 2 or 3 runs and it was well placed, the trainer would say, yep, I've prepared this to win first up. So, yeah, get your money on. So it's important to look at trials in that context, I think.
How heavily do you use sectional times?
I don't really. I'm not a great believer in sectionals, other than showing that the horse has got the acceleration to win a race, because I think a lot of it does depend on the race pace. I think Wink set a track record when it won the Cox Plate last week. So does that mean it's going to have outstanding sectionals? But it was very much based on the style of race on the day. So yeah, not
no problem. Yeah. When the tracks are wet, do you stop betting? Do you reduce your bets, or do you approach the actual form differently?
Well, the form these days is very comprehensive, and it in fact shows you what the horse's performance is like on the wet tracks. Although some of them, some of the horses, they do tend to, like a lot of them reckon that it depends upon the breeding and the hoof size and what have you, how well they can trail through the mud. But then again, wet tracks, it can be, is it holding? Is it slippery? Is it just dead? So various track conditions, it's hard to know, even though the pentrometer reading might show a high figure, it doesn't necessarily mean that that it's going to be it's the same as another track of the same reading. So it is a bit of conjecture, but yeah, I never stop betting because of the wet tracks. In fact, I tend to think that on those tracks, maybe the prices will be a bit better. If I'm betting, you know, if I want a certain price about a horse, I sometimes get it on a wet track where I might not get it on a good track. But there's no doubt that there is more volatility in the results on wet tracks, so you've just got to factor that into your price.
Yeah, and whether it's wet tracks or even firm tracks, do you ever take any notice of breeding?
Yeah, well, actually, yeah, as I mentioned, breeding and wet tracks, there is a lot of historical basis for saying that breeding of a horse does affect their ability to handle wet tracks. Also, if there's little disclosed form, especially for some of those early two-year-old and three-year-old races, rather than looking at their horse's form, look at their breeding.
What about big versus small markets? So you know, large tend to be efficient markets versus smaller, easy to beat markets, but where the actual the liquidity or getting a bet on might be a problem. Do you have a preference?
No, I don't, because it's price. I don't care if it's a big or small market. It's whether or not I've got the right price for the horse.
We'll move on to the betting and the staking side of things. So, do you ever bet level stakes, or is it always more proportionately?
Yes, I like to bet in proportion to the risk. Level stakes is, well, depending upon how much money you've got left in your kit, I suppose. It might all have to be level, but typically, I'll bet in proportion to the risk, and so therefore proportional betting. But I don't know if you mean by proportional also progressive. You're not talking about progressive, no, because that's to me that's a big no-no of increasing your bets as based on the past performance, because as everybody knows, probability has no memory.
Yes, I've heard you say that before, but no, we never will recommend the progressive side. Yeah. Some people I speak to have different staking levels depending on their confidence in the race. Mm-hmm. Do you do that, or is it what you mentioned before, you know, it's just in accordance with risk?
Well, if I do have a high level of confidence, it's because probably the price is better than I consider. Then, yeah, I mean, I learned from ages ago when I used to be working with Mark Reed that he always bet according to his prices, and therefore he had a lot more on a horse when his price was a big over compared to what the market was. And that's what the Kelly criterion is all about. Try to stake your bets in proportion to what you see as their overlay. Obviously, if you're a losing punter, then what Kelly criterion is saying is don't bet.
A lot of people wouldn't listen to that advice, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Market intelligence, so whether this is your win betting or the software that you've developed with the tab or license to the tab, when do you use market intelligence in your staking?
I don't really. It's based on what my price is. If you listen to the market, then you'll probably end up like the market, which, you know, as a zero-sum game, typically the average punter loses. So it's in some ways sad that you hear on the radio, oh, this is really shortened in. It's the it's the corporate bookie XXX, better the shortener. But the trouble is, the people who get on at the wrong price, not the right price. And so if you follow the market and say, right, I'll back that horse, you'll probably back more winners than you might back, but you won't, just by following that strategy, you're not going to make a profit in the long term, sadly.
Is your preference to bet early in the day or even early in the week, or is it late in betting?
Yes, well, based on, again, your prices, if the right price is early in the day, you bet early in the day. If that price doesn't appear until late in the day, then you'll only bet once you get your price. So there's no doubt that the pro punters, they make their money out of the early markets, that they, because they've done the form better than their bookmakers or the whoever is offering the odds, because they're the market, if you like, they're the market makers. They'll take an early price. People who talk 6-1 about Winks, they saw, they did their form, said, right, well, we see 6-1 about Winks is a great odds. Later in the day, it came into what it was probably around, it's probably a $4.50 shot in that race, and and that's where the early betting, you know, bears dividends. There's another pro punter I know that what he does is if the early market is bad, he will actually place his money on the tote, right? Because he expects those horses will end up going out in the betting and not coming in because they're overinflated at the start. And so he sort of modifies his strategy based on his perception of the market and what the market is offering at a particular point of time.
Do you ever bet long-term, you know, long-range futures, pre-post bets?
Again, if the price is there, yes. Yeah. But don't know.
Seems to be a recurring theme here.
Price, right? Yes, it's all about the odds.
Fair enough. When will you bet? I'm anticipating the answer here. When would you bet each way or place only?
Based on the price. Yeah.
Wow.
The interesting thing though is, and a lot of people don't realise it, that a bet for a place is completely different bet than for the win. A lot of people bet places as a sort of insurance in case their horse does badly, but for instance, not many people realise that all things being equal, a 7-to-1 chance has got the same chance as a 9-to-4, you know, $2.25 shot of running third in a race. So yeah, go figure on that. So yeah, depending upon the horse you want to back, and its style of running. I mean, if you think it's going to run a place, but you don't think it's got much chance of winning, then you go and find out what you see is the true place price, and then back it if you can get that price.
So just to expand on that, then, so you're saying from the research you've done, this is third, so not first or second, but the chances of a horse running third,
yeah.
No difference between 9-to-4 chance and 7-to-1.
Yeah, on the average, yeah, and it's not best, but it's just empirical evidence. If you people who want to sit down and get thousands of races and look at them. And it's probably based on the bookmaker's market, not a normalised market, but nevertheless, that's the strike rate of those horses, and there's a lot of factors that will come into play there, because typically, and if you go to the other end, a 100-to-1 shot and versus like an odds-on shot to run the place, you often find an odds-on shot won't run a place if it loses. If it doesn't win, it may not even run a place. And I guess that depends upon maybe the jockey, the trainer, the owners are saying, well, come on, Nick, you've got to make sure you win on this, you know. And so the jockey is trying to win the race. He's not trying to run second or third. Whereas the jockey on a 100-to-1 shot says, gee, the owners are going to be so happy if I just run into, like, in the first six and get a bit of prize money today. So, yeah, it's there's a bit of psychology there that isn't reflected in just, like, if you're drawing balls from a barrel where the odds are, you know, of coming out of fixed, it's not the same for horse racing. There's a lot more emotion and a lot more other factors that come into play in price setting and price assessment for the various forms of bets.
That's interesting. Yeah. I think quite a few people will be doing some research around about now. Yeah. So. Thanks for the prompts. With the exotics, I've been asking people whether they, you know, stake them proportionately, as in, you know, the more fancied runners have more combinations, and obviously, if you're talking trifectas, you know, more of the spots for first as opposed to, you know, outsiders, second and third and the like. Mm-hmm. A few other people want to box them.
Mm-hmm.
You're different because of the software you developed, so mm-hmm. probably a chance to quickly explain that.
Yes, in most exotics, and the more exotic, the more that the greater the disharmony in the market, if you like. But I'm talking more just in general terms. The rule of thumb is low odds are overbet, and high odds there's often not a big enough pool to compensate for the risk. So if you're betting in the middle range, it's typically the sweet range. It's the range where you've got less of a disadvantage. And the trouble is that exotics, the margin that the book or the tote takes out, 25% on the big six and the first fours, versus only 14% on win. So you've got to make up that margin somehow. So if you're just betting blind, boxing horses in a trifecta, sadly that's probably the worst bet type that you can have, unless of course the horses that you take are all about the same price, which means that there's no inherent disadvantage in doing what you're doing. But probably the worst bet type is people throwing in the short price favourite, right, to run in, say, a trifecta, thinking, oh, well, it's got to run somewhere. And again, because of that, favourites typically are overbet in exotics, especially when they don't win. And so if you're taking the favourites for second and third, well, just combining them in, because they're overbet, some of the dividends there it can be pretty woeful compared to the actual probability of that combination saluting.
Okay, so for your actual betting bank, do you have a static approach where, you know, you're not adjusting it whether you're on a long-term winning or losing run, or is it dynamic where you're updating it more regularly?
My betting style is dynamic, where it's the reverse of proportional staking. You work out your bets based on a percentage of your starting bank, and your starting bank is the amount that you can possibly, that you're prepared to lose in total, right? So don't bet according to your means, but there is then a way of determining your bet size based on your past betting profile of, like, what sort of bets do you have? Do you have all short priced, or do you more in the $4 to $10 range, or all they outsiders? But from that, you can actually determine what percentage of your bank and what percentage of the bet it should be on each runner, so that, all things being equal, your drawdown from your bank will be no more than, say, 50%. And so, all things happening according to Hoyle, your bank will never be more than half what it was ever staked at. So if your bank goes from 10,000 to 20,000, right, then the drop down from 20 back to 10 is probably the worst it will get. So therefore, you can continually increase your bets up to whatever level you feel comfortable with. And if you're a winning punter, then it's automatic adjustment of bet size. So you'll have exponential winnings gradually over time, versus if you stick to a static bank where you're always betting a certain percentage, then you will just be winning that same percentage on turn, or winning the same percentage. And so, I don't know if I've sort of overcomplicated it.
You have. Yep. Sounds like, you've got the maths right, that you've got the insurance you're not going to wipe out, but at the same time you can take advantage of
that's
compounding.
That's right, exactly. And that's what punting is about, trying to get the most you can out of your punting dollar.
All right, final two questions. The first one is, do you care more about profit on turnover as a percentage, so I suppose your margin, or is it just the bottom line, just profit only?
Well, the old adage is that you can't eat pot. You can smoke it, but you can't eat it. So you've probably heard that one before. So, profit is the name of the game. But, to each his own. So a smaller punter that may be happy with small returns, as long as they're getting a good profit on turnover. But in the long term, we're all about profit, aren't we?
Of course. And is winning percentage important?
No, price. Price is the most important.
I think that's the main thing people will have picked up from the conversation. So you've certainly got your point across there.
Okay.
Excellent. That's the list of questions we've been asking everyone. So really appreciate you coming on the show, Nick.
Okay. Thanks, David. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter, or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.